You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
New Hampshire shepherdesses love to listen to issues, etc.
Or what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
New parents love listening to issues, etc. In the middle of the night.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
It is everywhere now. When my grandchildren ask to look at pictures on the phone, they usually want to see something like coloring pages or some toy that they're yearning for. They want to find those pictures. I have to make sure that the phone, its search function is set to strict safety. And even then, I cannot let them look at the phone without me looking over their shoulder because it's hiding out there for them. And there are people who want my grandchildren to see porn. They really do, even at their tender age. Well, if it's everywhere and it's accessible and in many cases absolutely free, is there any way of combating it? Dr. Alan Carlson joins us to talk about combating pornography. He's senior fellow at the International Organization for the Family, author of numerous books, including his latest, Family Cycles, and a recent column for Touchstone magazine titled Moral Combat. Dr. Carlson, welcome back.
Good to be with you again.
You begin your Touchstone essay by discussing the video game Mortal Kombat. Why?
Well, it's a very popular game, the most popular of video games. It's been around for several decades now. It's also routinely ranked as the most violent, and there's some lessons to teach us here. There's 18 realms, some very attractive and beautiful, some quite ugly and nasty, but warriors between the realms gather and meet and fight, and they fight to the death. No quarter is given. And the game is defined by what they call the finishing move. After one warrior has defeated the other warrior, you have the obligation to kill and destroy and somehow mangle and ruin the opponent. So it tells us something about a kind of combat that obviously is very popular among the gamers today, where the liberal tolerance of rival worldviews is completely absent. And I use that to jump into a discussion of an episode about 140 years ago where something similar, not battles to the death, but at least battles to legal battles where no quarter was given, no understanding given, took place in the United States over the issue of pornography.
So you say there was a time in America when Christians engaged in a kind of moral combat. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a moral combat where, they were not willing to just say, well, you do your thing and I'll do mine. Some issues, on abortion, for example, and specifically here on the issue of pornography, they gave no quarter. They expected absolute prohibitions on activities deemed particularly harmful to the young. And pornography was one where they focused on and quite successfully.
What role did the Young Men's Christian Association, the YMCA, play at that time?
1872, actually a little bit earlier, 1866, the YMCA, again, at that time, a very Christian, very evangelical, very focused on confronting evil and corruption, particularly in the cities, looked to what was happening in New York City after the Civil War. Young veterans of the war who'd mostly grown up on farms, rural areas, were demobilized, and many wound up in cities. Nowhere to go, no one to protect them. And the pornography industry, believe it or not, was blooming. Photography had been around for several decades by then. What we call dirty books were around, dirty engravings. Postcards, eventually they were called Cuban postcards, were quite common. all showing classic forms of pornographic images. And the YMCA set out to suppress that. 1872, a young man named Anthony Comstock, a Civil War veteran, came into the Y, was deeply disturbed by the pornographic business he saw, and set out to suppress it. And he organized the, what eventually became the New York Society for the Suppression of Vice. It sounds quite odd and weird and unusual, but it had this in common with the Mortal Kombat rules. It secured legislation to completely ban all forms of pornography, all devices related to abortion, and also to contraception. We're focused on pornography today. And a complete ban, federal law completely banned its distribution through the mail. State laws followed very quickly, which banned the sale and, in some cases, the possession of these items. And the YMCA eventually spun this organization off. Other anti-vice societies formed in other major cities. And again, they were amazingly successful in suppressing the trade.
What kind of things did Anthony Comstock have to say?
Well, he focused primarily on the effects of pornography on the young, on young people. He said that pornography was addictive. Pornography, in particular for young people, would, shall we say, deeply affect, even damage their brains. All that sounds a little peculiar till we realize that's exactly what modern medical science tells us today. Early exposure to pornography does affect the chemistry, the balance, the sensory perceptions of the brain and the human nervous system. This was known 140 years ago. Back then, they acted on it, and he was determined to protect America's young from folks producing what he called vampire literature.
Was the battle against pornography effective at that time?
Extremely so. 1872, in New York City, there were about 100 titles, pornographic books, being published. By 1880, they were all gone, completely suppressed with one or two exceptions. By 1890 and 1900, in all the major cities of America, the anti-vice societies could report the complete disappearance of pornography, both in books, both in the postcards and the images, and in the magazines that were had been appearing quite frequently. So by 1900, and lasting as late as 1915, the pornography industry in America was completely and totally dead.
You talk about what you call a century of shocking Christians. What are you describing there?
Well, starting about 1915, which actually was the year Anthony Comstock died, but also the year in which all the great traumas of the 20th century began to take shape, particularly coming out of the Great War in Europe, World War I, which the United States would enter in 1917. Moral certainties, moral absolutes came under a form of challenge they'd never seen before. And already by 1915, American publishers, who had largely cooperated, indeed enthusiastically so, with suppression of the dirty book, began to publish books that were across the line. And Lady Chatterley's Lover by D.H. Lawrence was sort of the classic case that wound up going through the federal courts over several decades. Again, a book about Anthony Comstock would have called celebrating fornication and pornography, for that matter. The language was quite pornographic. Became sort of the test case, and American publishers began to look for ways in which to satisfy the baser instincts of, particularly of men, but also of women. Women enjoyed reading Lady Chatterley's Lover, and shocking the Christians became part of the fun and part of the game. Music after World War II took a, might be called an erotic turn. Rock and roll came along, which featured motions of the hip and so on, Elvis Presley being the most famous example, which earlier generations would have deemed completely unacceptable. All of this was part of the fun, was shopping Christians, and Christians would pontificate against these things. They would say it was terrible. They would denounce it. But the laws that had prohibited these sorts of things before, the books, the pictures, magazines such as Playboy, which appeared in 1952, the laws weren't being enforced anymore. The judges stopped ruling in favor of the laws. The prosecutors gave it up, and the realm and the domain of pornography began to grow quite dramatically in the United States.
What does the landscape look like today regarding porn?
Ever since the internet came along, all restraints are off, with one small but significant exception. Pornography of the worst kind is now available in every home in the land that has a computer. You don't even have to pay for it. It's free. Movies, images, all kinds of things. Much of it violent, all of it quite nasty. And by some estimates, 40% of the hits on the internet right now are porn-related. That's globally. So pornography is everywhere. And what had been confined, even as late as the 1950s, to shops on the, so we say, the bad side of town, where magazines would be kind of under the counter and sold surreptitiously, all that's gone. We live in a world that's dominated, almost defined, by pornography.
Given the abundant evidence of porn's harm to the individual, to the family, to society at large, why does there seem to be so little political will to do anything about it?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think the answer is it's diabolical. It is clearly addictive, and most American homes, the men in the homes and the women, maybe to somewhat a lesser degree, find value or pleasure, however you want to say it, have found themselves trapped in its clutches. And I don't think any politician is willing to come forward now and say we need to put a stop to this. Many people fall back on the argument, well, there's nothing you can do about it. Well, that's simply not true for several reasons. First, we do know that child pornography is still largely and successfully suppressed. Those who buy, sell, trade, make those images, or even possess them are tracked down and face quite serious legal consequences, including long prison terms. So in that one limited area of child pornography with boys and girls who are prepubescent, it shows that what could be done if there was the will to do so. And we also know that even if there's a 100 billion pornographic hits on the internet, say this year, and that's even a conservative number, recent episodes regarding politicians not favored by the high-tech industry show that Twitter can shut down images deemed unacceptable, words that are deemed inappropriate, and so on. That we've found out that can be done fairly easily. So if the will was there, and if the politicians had the courage to grasp it and take it on to protect the young again, it could be done. In fact, fairly easily, far more easily perhaps than in the days of Anthony Comstock, at least relative to the internet. So what we have is politicians completely fearful of even touching the issue. And to be frank, social conservatives, pro-life, pro-family people, rarely bring this subject up anymore. James Dobson, to his credit, some decades ago, tried to do something. There was a National Commission on Pornography, which had some recommendations, which were fairly weak and so on, but they were something. But even that has completely faded away, and there's no organization that I know of that has any effective program going on to try to put a stop to this.
Dr. Alan Carlson is our guest. We're talking about combating pornography. On the other side, are there factors that suggest it may be possible to do something to combat it? I hope, just by looking at some of these points, we recognize the pressure on us to be silent, but also the cost. Dr. Albert Moeller, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, making the case against Christian silence at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That I am fairly certain that I will one day die. If the Lord returns before I die, then to God be the glory. But I expect that one day I will die. I want to die talking.
You can watch and listen to Dr. Moeller's teaching and all of the presentations from this year's conference for a tax-deductible donation of $300 by Labor Day. It's available via on-demand video streaming or podcast. Learn more at IssuesETC.org or call 618-223-8385.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Truth, freedom, and vocation are the pillars of a Concordia University Chicago education. Through them, we form our students for lives of influence and service for the common good. This is the education American society needs right now. I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for truth, freedom, and vocation to become the pillars of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
At the center of our campus is Kramer Chapel, and there's a reason for that.
Issues Etc. guest, Dr. Arthur Just.
Because it is the heartbeat of Concordia Theological Seminary. It is where we go to hear the voice of Jesus and frequently be fed with the body and blood of Christ. We sometimes call it our Jerusalem. Kramer Chapel points to the classroom, which we sometimes call Athens. It is there that we do theology, biblical studies, systematic theology, practical theology, history. We love theology here, and we love the study of it, and we love coming together in worship. It's one of the things that gives us great joy. Joy in worshiping, joy in studying theology. Concordia Theological Seminary is all about the joy of being in Jesus.
Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, ctsfw.edu. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about combating pornography with Dr. Alan Carlson, Senior Fellow at the International Organization for the Family and author of numerous books, including his latest, Family Cycles, and a recent column for Touchstone magazine titled Moral Combat. So, Dr. Carlson, are there factors that suggest to you that it may be possible to do something to combat porn?
Well, again, I think the focus has to be on protecting young people. Maybe there, that's the way to go. Again, the evidence on the negative effects on youthful brains, on the chemistry, on the just the general operation of the youthful brain and the youthful mind shows something must be done. Otherwise, anything else we try to do in the realm of protecting life and family, to be frank, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. We run up against this huge monstrous thing called the porn industry. So I think there's a chance to break through there. We also have examples from the Christian past of ways in which the early Christians in particular faced similar challenges and not only survived but thrived and eventually won, just as we saw with the Comstock movement 140 years ago in the USA. The early Christians did something similar.
Does the prohibition really, as you said before, kind of the last prohibition against pornography in the case of child pornography give you any kind of hope?
Well, I think it does. It does show at least there's still a conscience out there. We'll see how much longer that lasts. I fear that it may be starting to break down, particularly not so much on the protection of little girls, but on the protection of little boys. As the gender cause merges with the old practice of what used to be called Greek love of men and boys, is that might break its way through again. I think if it does, even if that breaks down, it might come that way. So far, though, that hasn't happened, at least on a systematic basis. And the protection of children, if we extended that to the protection of young people, of through age 16, 17, and 18. There's a chance, I think, that argument could win.
What can we learn from those early Christians about a strategy to protect the family?
Well, the early Christians also engaged in their own form of shock. We have the examples of some of the great early martyrs, particularly in the 3rd century, when the Roman authorities really tried to completely crush the Christian movement after kind of hit-and-miss efforts before. And the examples of martyrs such as Pionius and Perpetua, where we have really quite dramatic and probably fairly accurate eyewitness accounts of their martyrdom before the courts, of how they stood and bore witness, shocking the Romans by their willingness to say, we will not throw a pinch of incense on the altar of the emperor, because that's not our God. Our God was revealed to us through his son, Jesus Christ. That's who we look to. They faced and went to death and set examples for other figures, even the judges, the guards, the prison guards, and so on, who watched them operate. Many concrete and real examples of how that led them into a conversion experience. The other thing we can learn from the Christians is that they operated on their own, call it moral level. Christianity this is almost forgotten these days, but it was a radical movement in defense of life and family, in its rejection of customary behaviors that dominated the early and late Roman empires. For example, the Christians did something that had never been done before. It abolished the double standard between male and female. Men and women, Christian men and women, were both expected to be chaste before marriage and faithful within marriage. Divorce was denounced by no less than Jesus himself, which again was something radically new, because even the Hebrews, males had easy divorce. Romans had very easy divorce, both men and women. The Christians rejected the moral practices or the sexual practices of the Romans, such as infanticide, very, very common, particularly of girl babies. We have pretty solid statistics on that. We also know that the Christians rejected abortion. They frowned and mostly rejected contraception. They rejected homosexuality. They rejected all of the practices that had become, again, normal, particularly in the large cities. And, again, they shocked their pagan neighbors. But one result was conversions. People saw in the moral disorders of that time, a way out. And they also had more babies, and they raised them better. They took in the babies that had been abandoned by the pagans through, again, at least the accepted practice of infanticide. And so the Christians ultimately just grew far more rapidly. Well, the pagan population was probably shrinking by that time. The Christians were doubling every 20 or 25 years. And eventually the persecution came to an end because half the population of the empire were Christian. The emperors finally realized, I better make our peace with these people. So anyway, the Christians shocked, and they shocked again, and there may be lessons for us to learn from that.
So how can Christians shock the culture today?
Well, doing some of the things which, if they're being faithful to the social ethic of Christianity, will still, again, now shock once more. Young couples who build a large family, anywhere from 4 to 10 or more children. Nothing disturbs the accepted ways of things now more than a large, happy Christian family with a strong, productive home. Married couples should joyfully re-embrace, I think, old concepts with rich new meaning. Husbandman, what it meant to be a husbandman, what it meant to be the good wife. The Puritans use those phrases. I think they are time for their upgrading, to bring them back, give them fresh new content. The celebration of natural one-flesh marital unions as God's will, and also as what the created order tells us how we're supposed to live. It's the way in which we don't get terrible diseases, such as AIDS or monkeypox and so on. And pastors, I think, are called right now to work with the young. again, stop apologizing for Christian social, family, and sexual ethics, which I think is still the common practice. Preach boldly about how terrific Christian sexual ethics are, how they are the answer to the muddle and the darkness in which our culture has wandered. So that's at least some of the things I would suggest. Again, shock and shock again.
Dr. Alan Carlson is senior fellow at the International Organization for the Family. He's author of numerous books, including his latest, Family Cycles, and a recent column for Touchstone titled Moral Combat. You'll find a link to it and to Family Cycles at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. Carlson, thank you.
You are welcome.
We will get an update on a Finnish hate crime trial with Pavi Rossinen, formerly served as the Minister of the Interior in Finland and chair of the Finnish Christian Democrats. She is facing that trial. She'll join us from Finland next.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we close out our study of Revelation with Come, and then we move into Genesis with Creation Day 1, Creation Days 2 and 3, Creation Day 4, and Creation Day 5 and part of 6. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
For nearly 140 years, the Lutheran Witness has taught the faith, defended it against error, and shown forth the great treasures of the Lutheran Church and biblical doctrine. We're continuing this legacy by publishing issues and articles that help you see the world from a Lutheran perspective and that teach biblical doctrine and show forth the treasures of God's Word. Visit our website to learn more and how to subscribe, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We desire for all Christian children, including those with learning or behavior challenges, to receive a strong education in the faith. At simplyclassical.com, you will find reading, penmanship, and copybook exercises based on the truth, wisdom, and comfort of God's Word. We include Aesop's Fables and classic children's literature, math and science, all from Memoria Press. Use promo code LPR22 at simplyclassical.com.
Confessional Lutherans are invited to rent a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom Table Rock lakefront home in the Ozarks. Table Rock Lake is a premier lake in the heart of the Ozarks for boating, water sports, and fishing. This log cabin-style rental sleeps 12. And is 30 minutes from Branson and 20 minutes from Silver Dollar City. Learn more by calling Swanson Estates, 713-855-2681. Be sure to mention Issues Etc., 713-855-2681.